Today on Straight Talk Africa, a conversation with America's top Africa diplomat, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. Among other things, we'll discuss President Obama's upcoming trip to Kenya and Ethiopia, the U.S. position on constitutional term limits, the crisis in Burundi, and the conflict in South Sudan. That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, July 15th. I am Shaka Salih. My colleague and social media reporter, Maria Majaro, continues on her special assignment based in the Senegalese capital, Dakar. And today, we have a conversation with America's top Africa diplomat, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield. And coming up later in our STA inbox, you, our audience, have weighed in on our topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments, and we'll reveal some of them later. But first, President Barack Obama travels to Kenya and Ethiopia next week to further U.S.-Africa relations. Those relations are challenged by an ongoing conflict in South Sudan, a political crisis in Burundi with concerns regarding presidential term limits, and the fight against terrorism on the continent. For President Obama, the trip to Kenya could also be deeply personal. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
You know, I stand before you as the President of the United States and a proud American. I also stand before you as the son of a man from Africa.
Building on progress made at the U.S. African Leaders Summit in Washington last summer, President Obama is making his fourth trip to sub-Saharan Africa since becoming president. He'll attend the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Nairobi, Kenya, July 25th and 26th. His visit to Kenya also fulfills a pledge made early in his presidency to return to his father's homeland. The U.S. president is expected to discuss security and other mutual concerns with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta before moving on to Ethiopia. Mr. Obama will become the first ever sitting president to go to Ethiopia and its capital, Addis Ababa. He's scheduled to meet with the Ethiopian leadership, visit the headquarters of the African Union, and address its leadership. President Obama's trip to East Africa comes as deadly fighting continues unabated in South Sudan between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those supporting opposition leader Riek Machar. The political crisis in Burundi is deepening in response to President Pierre Nkurunziza's bid to seek a third term. The opposition is refusing to participate in presidential elections. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield says it's up to the Burundian government to stop the violence.
We call on the president to take responsibility for ensuring that the violence ends and that there is no retaliation against demonstrators who are peacefully demonstrating to support their views that the president should not seek a third term.
The thrice-delayed presidential vote is now set for Tuesday, July 21st. Until now, President Obama has avoided visiting African nations like Ethiopia, which is struggling with governance challenges, and where the same party has been in power for 25 years, and Kenya, a nation struggling to combat recent terrorist attacks. Kenya's ambassador to the U.S., Robinson Gitay, says everyone should be worried about militants and extremists.
Terrorism is a global problem. It's not a Kenyan problem.
The U.S. agrees.
We are strongly committed to assisting African countries to increase their capacity to address the immediate threats posed by terrorist organizations and to prevent terrorists from using the region to recruit, seek sanctuary, secure resources, and financing from their people.
With this historic trip, President Obama reaffirms America's consistent support for the emerging continent and will continue raising good governance issues with his African counterparts.
To the new Africa, the Africa that is rising and so full of promise, and to our shared task to keep on working for the peace and prosperity and justice that all our people seek and that all our people so richly deserve.
Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thank you very much, Paul. And, of course, we are back on track. Joining us here in our Washington studios, of course, again, is our distinguished guest, the one and only Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, a career diplomat who began her foreign service in 1982, and during that period, she has crisscrossed the continent. Okay. It is a pleasure, of course, always to have the opportunity to host
I'm
you on
Straight Talk
Africa.
I'm delighted to be here.
You're most welcome. And the program will give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me ask you one question for the moment, really, because you've been crisscrossing the continent lately, and you seem also to be on the verge of returning there next week.
I'm looking forward to returning to East Africa next week when the President of the United States will be making another historic trip, his fourth to the continent of Africa, mm-hmm. visiting Kenya and Ethiopia and participating in the Global Entrepreneurship Conference in Kenya and having meetings with the AU Commission in Addis.
In Addis Ababa. When you think about it, really, this, of course, being the fourth trip for President Barack Obama, and this one, of course, including the birthplace of his father, how does it feel like, especially given that you are actually going to be going with the President of the United States?
I don't know that I can describe what the President will feel, but I can imagine that he will be very happy to be in the birthplace of his father. I certainly will be happy to be part of that visit and to share in the joy that I know Kenyans will feel having the President of the United States there, and also the commitment that his visit there will convey to the people of Kenya and in Ethiopia, the people of Ethiopia, our commitment to seeing their countries move forward.
I see. And when you think about the trip to Ethiopia, it seems to have kind of like triggered some controversy. There are people who feel that perhaps, in fact, the president shouldn't be going to Addis Ababa. Why?
Well, I think I don't know that I can describe the feelings of the comments that you're hearing in public. But for us, the president's trip to Ethiopia is an important stop. It's an important stop that will convey to the government and people of Ethiopia our commitment to supporting their efforts in fighting terrorism, but also will be an opportunity to use the voice of the president to convey messages to the government of Ethiopia regarding human rights, regarding press freedom, and to ensure that this government continues efforts in that will put Ethiopia in the right place when it comes to human rights.
I see. And we sort of talked about how the president's trip to Ethiopia is coming under a lot of criticism. Are you surprised by that?
No, I'm not surprised by the criticism. But what I say to those critics is that we have a choice in terms of our engagements with African countries. We have a choice to engage or not engage. Mm-hmm. And we have made the choice of engaging. We engage on issues that are difficult with these governments, on complicated issues. We raise concerns about human rights. We raise concerns about press freedoms. We raise concerns about people being held in prison. And in the case of Ethiopia, this will be on the agenda. So I think it's important that the president, that his voice be used in carrying the messages that we want to carry to these governments. But at the same time, we also have a strong bilateral relationship with the Ethiopian government, one in which we cooperate with them on counterterrorism. And that is an issue that we need to continue to engage with them on.
What about critics who say that, yes, they are your allies, in fact, when it comes to fighting terrorism, but that when it comes to democracy, that Ethiopian government, frankly, leaves a lot to be desired?
I would say that they are correct, and that is a conversation that we have with the Ethiopian government, and it's the conversation that the president will have with the government when we visit Ethiopia.
What about the meeting with the African Union. At what level is that going to take place? Is it going to be with the Secretariat, or is the President, in fact, for the first time perhaps publicly going to meet with Zimbabwean President Robert Gabriel Mugabe, who happens to be the chairman of the African Union?
Well, the President will, while he's in Ethiopia, meet with the African Union Commission, and he will be meeting with Lamini Zuma, the chairman, and he will be giving a speech at the African Union.
So there's not going to be a meeting between President Obama and Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, who happens to be the boss of the African Union for the year.
You're correct that he is the current president of the African Union, representing the member states. While we're in Ethiopia, we will be meeting with the commission.
I see. Let's ask you about South Sudan.
Yes.
What is the U.S. position on South Sudan, really?
You know, we're disappointed. We're sad with what is happening in South Sudan. This war has been going on for more than a year. We're going deep into the second year of war. It has had a devastating impact on this very young nation. Thousands of people have been killed. Tens of thousands of people have been made homeless over a fight that, for all intents and purposes, is personal. This country, these people have fought for too many years for their independence, for their freedom of religion. And 3 years into independence, we are dealing with what has none of us expected to happen in South Sudan. And it is important as we move forward that we find a way to peace, that the two leaders bring themselves to the negotiating table and make a decision that will benefit all of the people of South Sudan so that this country can continue to move forward.
You know that last week, of course, South Sudan celebrated its fourth independence anniversary. And in fact, a day before, the government of Salva Kiir Mayardit extended itself for another 3 years. And the opposition leader, Riek Machar, says, in fact, the move is illegal. What is the U.S. position on that?
Our position is this country has to find a way to put forward a transitional government that will bring this country to peace. And right now, we're not there. They have a government that is not making the decisions that will lead to peace. They have a anti-government movement that is fighting for something that does not, in our view, reflect the will of the people of South Sudan.
Well, we have to go for a break. We'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA State Africa or hashtag State Africa. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Five pillars of U.S. policy towards Africa: support democracy and the strengthening of democratic institutions, including free, fair, and transparent elections. Support African economic growth and development. Assist in conflict prevention, mitigation, and resolution. Support presidential initiatives such as the Global Health Initiative, Feed the Future, and the Global Climate Change Initiative. Work with African nations on multinational issues such as drug smuggling, money laundering, illicit arms, and human trafficking.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like Follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiu Iwat, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, which is coming to you live from Washington. Continuing with South Sudan, there are some observers who have actually gone to the extent of saying that last week's move in Juba to extend the tenure of the government of General Salva Kiir Mayardit, in their words, is in fact unconstitutional. What does the United States and its fellow members on the TRAICA feel or think about that?
Well, it's interesting that you use the Constitution, because one of the tasks that the Salva Kiir government had was to move forward in developing the Constitution. They need a Constitution. But in order to get to that point, they also need peace. And they do need a government that reflects the will of the people. At this point, being in a situation of war, they're not in a position to move forward on the constitutional agenda. They are not in a position to move forward on the peace agenda. So what we want to see this government and the warring parties do is go to the negotiating table and move forward on finding a transition that is acceptable to all sides and that will lead to peace and lead to a legitimately elected government for the next term.
The regional group, of course, IGAD, had put in place a mechanism for allowing a sort of transitional period where different forces would share power and then, of course, work on a new constitution and obviously make plans for elections. Is that where you still think that the two forces need to be?
Well, right now the two forces need to get to a peace process that will allow the people of South Sudan to move forward. And they are still fighting. Efforts for more than a year and a half to find a solution to this war have not succeeded. Those efforts continue being led by the IGAD Plus. And we are part of that process through our special envoy, and we will continue to engage until we find a way to bring them to the negotiating table and sign on a deal that they both will honor, because they've signed deals that they have not honored in the past.
But what is it, frankly, do you think that these forces need to do in order to restore peace and stability, so that the average South Sudanese human being can live their life? Because conflicts, sometimes people tell you, they occur because people are fighting over the scarcity of resources. Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about a country, Linda, frankly, that is blessed with a very, very fertile soil. It could, in fact, be the breadbasket, some people will tell you, for the Middle East. You are talking about oil, gas, gold, and you name it. Mm-hmm. You even have very few people. We're talking about the neighborhood of 12 million people. What is it that they are fighting for, really?
That's a question. I would love you to invite both of them to your program and ask them what they're fighting for. What we think they're fighting for is power. What they're fighting for is political position. And they're fighting for control over what are massive resources that should be going to building the economy, providing jobs, and building a future for the people of South Sudan. And the solution is peace. And neither one of them have been willing to set aside their own goals to move in that direction.
Let's go to the issue of Burundi, the Burundi crisis. The State Department has been very, very vocal on Burundi. You have basically, in fact, focused on the issue of President Pierre Nkurunziza like a sort of political laser beam. What is it that needs to be resolved in Burundi? Because we're not talking about changing the constitution here. We're talking about tweaking it, perhaps.
Now, what we're talking about in Burundi is transition. What we're talking about is President Nkurunziza accepting the fact that he has had two full terms as president and honoring the principles of the Arusha Accord, which limits the president to two full terms. There are interpretations being made of the Constitution that suggest that his first term was not an elected term by popular vote, so it doesn't count. But in fact, we believe it does count. And we think he's had 10 years. He's had 10 good years. And during those 10 years, Burundi has been a stable country. Mm-hmm. And I think he has a tremendous amount to be proud of that he accomplished during those 10 years. My question is, what does he need to do in the next 5 years that he wants to stay in power for 15 years? And that's a question we've not gotten an answer to. Our policy has been clear on transition. Mm-hmm. We think it's important that governments have transition, that presidents stay in power and honor their constitutions, mm-hmm. and that they allow for there to be change. It is what we understand African people want, and it is what we believe is important for countries to move forward and to establish themselves as a democracy.
There is an email from Ewan Rick in Washington, D.C., which says, why is the U.S. policy inconsistent when it comes to third term or term limits for African presidents? Secretary John Kelly was quite vocal in his objections to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza seeking re-election, but there seems to be silence regarding Rwanda's efforts at amending its constitution to allow a third term for President Paul Kagame. How do you react to that? In fact, you have also even talked about the issues in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, but we haven't had any voice regarding the process in Rwanda.
Look, our policy is very consistent, and it's global. It is not about one country. It is not about one region. It is not about the African continent. It is a global policy that is supportive of constitutional change. Mm-hmm. And consistently, we have stated that we do not support any government that changes its constitution to extend term limits that benefits the president who is in power. And it doesn't matter what country that is. Mm-hmm. So we have not ignored the situation in Rwanda. We have not ignored the situation in other countries in the world. There are countries where there are no constitutional term limits. And even in those countries, we believe there should be term limits. But we are particularly incensed when we see governments changing the constitution to benefit the president in power.
The other question is, why is the U.S. government reluctant to accept the ruling of Burundi's constitutional court, even while other countries respected the U.S. Supreme Court 5-4 ruling of 2000 Bush versus Gore?
Well, first of all, the constitutional court of Burundi, that ruling was somewhat questionable. We know that two members of the Constitutional Court have left the country.
Actually, one.
One?
Yes.
And that person indicated that there was tremendous pressure being put on the court to encourage the court to make this decision when, in fact, the court was making the opposite decision. Mm-hmm. We also know that the Arusha Accord is the abiding document for which Burundi was established. And Nkurunziza was put in power. And we do believe that the Constitution is this interpretation of the Constitution goes against that, against the Arusha Accord. But finally, let me say, I don't think this is a legal issue in any case. In Burundi, it's not about the Constitution. It's not even about the Arusha Accord. It's about transition. And the people of Burundi have indicated that they want change. You've had a president who has been in power for 10 years, and he is making every attempt, after failing to get the parliament to change the constitution. He has looked for other attempts to move toward getting a third term. And we think that he is going against the wishes of the people of Burundi.
He just held, they just held local elections, and he seems to have the mathematics on his side, which can, in fact, allow him to do whatever he wants to do with amending the Constitution.
Well, that certainly is the case when you don't have an open society, you don't allow for opposition, that you don't have an inclusive process. When that happens, you will get a political result that meets your goals.
You attended an East African Community Regional Leaders Conference or Summit.
I did.
In Dar es Salaam, the commercial capital of Tanzania. What was the feeling among the East African leaders, really, as far as Burundi is concerned?
The views, standing on the outside of all of this, the views seem somewhat mixed. I did not have the impression that it was unified. Mm. There were some among the East African community leaders who clearly felt that Nkurunziza should leave, and there were others who felt differently. Unfortunately, we were not able to come to any conclusions because of the unfortunate coup attempt, and President Nkurunziza left to return to Bujumbura.
When you talk about, you know, somebody, of course, will say people who embark on the political shifting of the constitutional goalposts, and you really have very strong views as far as the United States is concerned, is there a chance, a possibility, that in fact you could adopt a policy whereby if an incumbent president changes or amends the constitution for personal or political reasons, you withdraw your recognition of that government, just in the same way if someone had, for example, seized the power through a military coup, you wouldn't do business with them. Mm-hmm. Is there a way you could elevate that to that level? Because in a way, it is a coup, isn't it?
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a coup. It's not a violent overthrow of government. We may consider it illegal, but it certainly is not violent. And so I don't think we would go so far as to end relations with the government because of that. But I think we have no doubt that we will continue to express our concerns about this government, the legitimacy of the government, and may, in fact, take some actions against that government in terms of sanctions. In terms of, for example, looking at whether we should continue to allow them to participate in AGOA, whether we would want them, if they were in the process of qualifying for MCC, to continue in that process, and also look at our level of foreign assistance to them.
Well, you're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a conversation with America's top Africa diplomat, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, in a moment. First, we'll reveal some feedback we have received from through you, social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan in Nigeria.
Our letter of the week is from Edwin Ekene of Abuja, Nigeria. He writes, I don't want to sound pessimistic about President Barack Obama's visit to Africa, but I must admit that United States policy towards Africa transcends Mr. Obama, and it will continue that way after he leaves office in January 2017. So whatever policy the U.S. formulates and implements in Africa is a product of America's national interest and not President Obama's personal interest, his biological ties to the continent, or his family affinity for Africa.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're going to get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githuri Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Ambassador Greenfield's recent visit to South Africa and Tanzania, just ahead of President Barack Obama's scheduled to visit to his father's homeland, Kenya, for the Global Entrepreneurship Summit. And thereafter, he will travel to the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, to meet with African Union officials. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, do you think President Barack Obama's Africa trip will significantly improve U.S.-Africa relations? Thanks for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. Let's begin with a comment from Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan Michael Guma Byuma from Kabale, southwestern Uganda, who writes, the U.S. has always supported Africa and has enjoyed great relations with many African countries. President Obama's visit certainly strengthens that long tradition of good relations. We hope that he uses this chance to condemn the ongoing despotic leadership in some African nations. Another reminder that we are on Twitter. Use the hashtag VOA State Africa or hashtag State Africa. And if you haven't, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Sidney Gee of Queenstown, Eastern Cape in South Africa, who writes, he's been here before and committed millions of dollars to improve Africa, but Africa showed no vital signs of life in the ever after. We have another tweet from Sophia Tesfamariam from Reston in the U.S. state of Virginia, U.S., Africa relations is not with the people, only with regimes that do its bidding with the hashtags at Djibouti and at Ethiopia. Well, Madam Ambassador, what about all that?
Well, it's interesting to hear all of those comments, but let me be clear. There is absolutely no truth in comments that our policies are not about people. Mm-hmm. Our policies are always about the people of Africa. When we're promoting human rights, it's about the human rights of the people in the countries that we're working with. When we're promoting press freedom, it's about promoting press freedom for journalists in African countries. When we're paying millions of dollars to support humanitarian assistance programs, billions of dollars. That is about the people of Africa, our development programs, Power Africa. These are programs that support people. Our PEPFAR program, that means that for the first time in a generation, Africans are in countries that are affected by HIV/AIDS are born, children are born AIDS-free. This is about the people of Africa. Even in countries where we have difficulty with governments, we continue to support programs that support the people. I would like to raise the YALI program, Young African Leaders mm-hmm. Initiative, where we have 500 young, extraordinary African entrepreneurs, public servants, and civil society individuals who are in the United States. 500 were here last year. These are not government people. These are people who will go back into their communities and will make a difference in the lives of others that they meet with. So while we continue to have relations with governments, and including some governments we don't like, and some governments you don't like, In every single country, our policy is about ensuring that the people of those countries have a future.
There's no question that the IALI program, otherwise, of course, also known as Mandela Washington Fellowship, is a great policy, especially when you think about, moving forward. But how about others who will also say, fine, but for the most part, really, they say that your policies, it has been very much like a reflection of talking the talk without walking the talk so that Africans can walk the walk. Just in the same way that Washington engaged Eastern Europe during the Cold War. It was very specific, very unambiguous. The policy there was pro-people, not pro-dictators of Eastern Europe.
Well, I would argue the same thing for our policy in Africa, that we have a policy that supports the people of Africa. Ask those people who benefited from PEPFAR if they have not seen us walk the walk.
No, that's a good policy.
Ask those young Mandela Washington fellows if we have not walked the walk with them. The people who will benefit from Power Africa will see immense changes in their lives. This is not about governments. It's about people. And yet we must, in this day, in this era, we must engage with governments. That is what foreign policy is about. That is what negotiations are about. That is what ending wars is about. It's about engaging with governments.
Now let's move on to a posting from Hussein Mayomba from Dodoma, Tanzania, who writes, President Barack Obama's visit to Africa will significantly improve the relationship between the U.S. and Africa. His trip may pave the way for discussions and agreements on fair trade, transfer of technology, as well as a commitment to building democracy, free speech, government transparency, and respect for human rights. Africa's leaders and citizens need to capitalize on the opportunities arising from Mr. Obama's rare visit. And another Facebook comment comes from Osman Mohamed Bar of Freetown, Sierra Leone, who writes, I fear that President Obama's visit will not benefit Africa. Africans need to stop hoping or even believing that America or any other country will come in and make Africa a better place for us. I think it is high time we start being Africans and not beggars. What about that? What say you, Madam Ambassador?
Well, first of all, if you look at our mission statement, and you ran that early, our policy is about partnering with Africa. We're not about giving to Africa. We're not about foreign aid. This is about partnering with Africa so that we can achieve with them democracy, peace, and prosperity. And again, on the issue of Africans not feeling U.S. government support, for someone who is writing from Freetown, the efforts that the U.S. government led in fighting Ebola was felt over the entire of West Africa. And tens of thousands of people were saved from the impact of Ebola because we do care and we do want to continue to partner with Africans to see this continent continue to prosper.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel, subscribe to VOA TV to Africa, and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, a preview of the significance of President Obama's trip to Kenya, his father's homeland, and to Ethiopia. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, welcome back today. And of course, we have one-on-one conversation with America's top Africa diplomat. Our distinguished guest is Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. And of course, I am told we have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, the real people.
Okay.
Yes, good morning. In fact, it's good afternoon, Claude Gatebuche from Tennessee.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Shaka, and good afternoon, Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
I'm hugely terrific, except that you made a mistake, my friend. Calling me a doctor without a clinic, I think, is not very, very good.
Sounds like you're sitting in it.
Your question, please.
Okay. My question is, I've listened to part of the show in the discussion about Burundi, and wanted to bring up that the Rwanda yesterday rubber stamped President Kagame of Rwanda extending his term limits beyond the constitutional two-term limits. He's been president for 15 years, and just like Burundi, there's no open society in Rwanda where really the people have a voice and they can request the change. And when President Obama went to Ghana, he proclaimed that history is on the side of the people and not on the side of those who use schools and constitutional changes to remain in power. So my question is, what message will President Obama deliver to presidents like Kagame who are pushing their countries into presidential monarchies on the people beyond their term limits? And more importantly, what will the U.S., and this is specifically for you, Ms. Ambassador, what will the U.S. do tangible in terms of U.S. policy toward countries like Rwanda, or Rwanda specifically, since U.S. taxpayers are contributing approximately $200 million to the Rwandan government in terms of aid? What will the U.S. do to use that leverage to bring about, for Rwanda to bring about reforms in support of the people, as I've heard on this show?
Shall I?
Yes, please.
Our policy is clear on changing the Constitution to benefit the president in power. It doesn't matter what country it is. It doesn't matter what region it is. We don't change the policy because it's a different country and we have a different relationship with that country. So, again, I would state very clearly our policy has not changed. In terms of how we will address this, it's addressed differently in different countries. But it still will be addressed in the case of Rwanda, as we have done in the case of Burundi. This just happened yesterday. I won't discuss our policy options with you here on television and in public, but certainly there are issues there that we will soon be addressing.
Very good. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. This country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
U.S. State Department Bureau of African Affairs. The U.S. has contributed to democratic transitions in Ivory Coast, Guinea, and Niger, successful elections in Nigeria, and an independence referendum in South Sudan. Promotes African economic development through the annual Africa Growth and Opportunity Act. Actively works to end sexual and gender-based violence in the DRC while seeking to eliminate atrocities committed by the LRA in Central Africa. Feed the Future, the U.S. government's global food security initiative, focuses on 12 African countries. The Global Health Initiative hopes to invest $63 billion over 6 years to help partner countries improve the health of women, newborns, and children.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizu Iwad. And of course, we go back to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good afternoon, Professor Ami Omara Otunu from the beautiful state of Connecticut.
Good afternoon, Shaka.
Usually a terrific, an emperor without an empire. What about that?
Thank you, Shaka. It's an honor to pose this question to the Secretary of State for African Affairs. I think Shaka was spot on when he said that most of us were inspired by the way America conducted its campaign for democracy in Eastern Europe. It was robust. It was unambiguous. And indeed, we were inspired when President Barack Obama went to Ghana and said that Africans need strong institutions, not big rulers. However, on the ground, it must be admitted that, in fact, we've seen contradictions, patchy achievements. In Nigeria, Kerry did articulate very ambiguously American position. I think Africans appreciate that. But in my country of birth, Uganda, we have a dictator who's been Museveni's been in power for 30 years. And each time any democratic opposition tries to articulate a new vision, the opposition is beaten ruthlessly. The example of Kizza Besigye being beaten far worse than you could actually treat a dog or an animal. But somehow we never heard America articulate in a position to this sort of treatment. And then, paradoxically, President Museveni is asked to go and mediate in Burundi, when actually his corrosive influence has brought so much suffering all over East Africa. How do you inspire confidence among the vast majority of Africans who really admire American values, but see that America quite often does not walk the talk, Ambassador.
Thank you. What about that, Linda?
Look, I love the comparisons with Eastern Europe. I have to say this, we've gone through quite a few decades since that. So I'm not sure that it's a comparison that works for me. But I can say that our policy is clear. And even in the case of Uganda, we've had the same discussions with your president about transition and about term limits, even though your constitution, the Ugandan constitution, does not have a provision for term limits. But even in those places where there are no provisions for term limits, we believe it's important that there be transitions. Implicit in your question is the belief that we can impose our will on your countries. And that certainly is not the case, but we certainly can ensure that the countries such as Uganda understand what our policy is. And I think President Museveni does understand that policy. The decision to have President Museveni negotiate with President Nkurunziza in Burundi was a decision made by the East African community, for which we are not a member. And it is my hope that despite any concerns about where he stands on this issue in Uganda, that hopefully he will have some influence on the situation in Burundi. We are taking these things one step at a time. They will not happen overnight. We're dealing with a generation of African leaders who have been in power for many years, and they're very comfortable. But we are also seeing changes in the people of Africa in terms of their abilities to express their views and their commitment to seeing change. And I think Nigeria was the perfect example of that. Many people have thanked the U.S. government for our efforts in Nigeria, and I have refused to accept that thanks, because what happened in Nigeria was the will of the Nigerian people. And we were there to support their efforts. We were behind them. We pushed them. We gave where we could give to support those efforts. But without their will, this change could not happen. We are there for other African countries to support their people as well. But change will come, and it will not always come at a speed in which we are comfortable. But do know that we are supporting the desires and the will of the people of Africa to see democracy flourish, and democracy cannot flourish in places where leaders stay in power for life.
You know, for Uganda, perhaps for the benefit of the audience, we should point out that until 2005, the Ugandan constitution had term limits. But the term limits were removed back in 2005 through a process, in fact, of bribing members of parliament, and not a lot of money. Each of them took home about $3,000. Mm-hmm. Of course, the phrase used is facilitating. Yeah. And this is a man, by the way, Linda, back in 2001, he appealed to his party, the NRM, to give him a second term, having served earlier 10 years of bonus, plus five elected in 1996. He said, give me a second and last constitutional allowable term so that I can accomplish three things. One, choose a successor. He probably chose himself. Two, secure a regional economic market. And three, professionalize the army. I guess one has to blame the members of parliament, frankly, that voted in favor of that, and perhaps the Ugandan people for that matter. Let's go to the other side, the other part of the continent. Let's go to Nigeria. Good evening, Patrick. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Saka. Good evening, the ambassador, Mr. Patrick Okrapo in Arusha, Nigeria. I want to find out from the ambassador. President Obama coming to Africa is a good development. When President Obama leaves the office, what is the guarantee that the next president of America will continue the initiative? Ambassador, it's when will Obama visit Nigeria? Thank you very much.
Well, before the president goes to Africa next week, President Buhari will be coming to the United States. He's been invited to meet with the president in the Oval Office. This is an opportunity, we believe, to reaffirm our strong relationship and also commit to the new government of Nigeria our support for their efforts as they address many of the key challenges that they will face, to include terrorism and Boko Haram, but also economic and corruption issues. So we look forward to that visit, and we think that that visit will be one that the president of Nigeria and the people of Nigeria will very much appreciate. I think your other question was, and I didn't hear it very clearly, was how can we be sure that the next president of the United States would be as committed to Africa? Was that the question? Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that has been really, really important for me as the Assistant Secretary, we have continued to have support for Africa across party lines in the Congress, but also as we have changed presidents and changed parties. If you look at our AGOA legislation, which I'm really delighted was extended for another 10 years, That AGOA legislation was passed under the Clinton administration. It was enhanced by the Bush administration, and now it has been extended under the Obama administration. PEPFAR, which started under the Bush administration, has continued to flourish under the Obama administration. And I know that whomever is elected in our next election, whatever party, that their commitment and support for Africa will continue. The legacies that each of our presidents have left in supporting Africa's move toward prosperity, I think those efforts will be supported by the next president. And certainly in the Congress, we've had that support on both sides of the House.
Given what the Nigerian people really did to make not only their country proud, but Africa proud, at least in the context of democracy, don't you honestly think that perhaps President Obama owes them a trip before he retires from the White House?
Well, I can't speak about the president's travel, but I can speak about what Nigerians did. And I can tell you that the people of America, those of us who are working in the government on Nigerian issues, we were so proud of what the Nigerian people were able to accomplish. President Buhari coming to the United States less than 3 months into his term in office enhances and highlights to the Nigerian people how committed we are to seeing Nigeria move forward. And we look forward to partnering with President Buhari and his government as they fight a very terrible fight against terrorism, as they deal with their economy, and as they deal with corruption, the three priorities that he has put on the table for during his first few weeks in office.
In the last 30 seconds, I know that you observed the elections in Nigeria. You also had the opportunity to attend the inauguration. I have to tell you, frankly, that watching the change of guard from Goodluck Jonathan to Major General Buhari, retired but not fired, I had tears of joy. How did you feel?
I felt those same tears of joy. Many people over the past 2 years thought that Nigeria was on the verge of implosion.
You have 10
and
seconds.
Nigerians proved that they were not.
I see.
They proved that they were ready to move forward in the community of democracy.
Unfortunately, Linda, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield. Thanks to affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, Daybreak Africa with James Abate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.